Welcome everybody. This is Chef Wonder Weekly, episode 68, I was just told, which is kind of cool. My name is Cesar Juvonen. I'm a principal program manager from the OneDrive SharePoint engineering side of the Heist, everybody. And the secondary host, the second host on this call is Waldek. Who are you? Why are you here?
Hey everybody, my name is Waldek Mastikas. I am head of product at Rancor. And today with us is our wonderful guest, Erwin van Hoonen.
He used to be your colleague, apparently. No, not anymore. So
still is at PNP.
What happened? Well, that's true. That is true.
There you go. Like, this world's really small.
So, Erwin is definitely... I think this is actually the third time Erwin is here. So we need We need to ramp up our visitor queue, which is, by the way, looking really awesome for the upcoming weeks, but not this week. No, that's not what I meant. Sorry.
Stop Erwin. Digging. Stop digging.
But people keep on asking Erwin more Erwin time as well, because everybody knows who Erwin is. But you should actually explain, who are you? What do you do?
Erwin van Hoonen, long time PNP core member thing person. How many years already? Five? I think five.
Is it five? From 2004. Yeah. So internally, we started stuff in 2013, right? Yes.
7 years.
Yeah. So the first time we went public with a office AMS was in SBC 2014.
Okay.
Wow,
so
it's 2020.
And after that, in December, I think I joined. Wow. Well, okay, whatever. So
TLDR, long time.
Long time. The gray hairs, they come for a reason.
I don't code, so that's why I don't have
it. Do you dye them?
I didn't say if the gray hairs came from coding or from the other team members. I didn't say that.
Wait a minute. So you have gray hair, you don't. Yeah. I do have gray hair, so it's kind of... Yep. Like, yeah.
What is the common factor here?
Point is becoming clear, exactly.
But okay, so besides my PMP work, I'm a lead architect nowadays at Valo Internet. And within Valo, I work on things that actually most people won't see. So, yeah, it's unfortunate, but it's all things behind the scenes.
That was a really awesome sales speech, right? So I'm going to do an awesome stuff. Nobody's going to see.
There will be people that will be. Yeah, well, it's not something that will be consumer. Let's put it like that, consumer focused. I'm working on really interesting.
I think it's highly consumer focused.
if all is well, you will not see it.
Correct.
If everything works as intended, you will not see it.
In principle, yeah.
Kind of like engine in your car. You don't see it. If all is well, you don't look at
idea. It's that idea. So now I'm working basically on the provisioning experience. So given my background at PNP with PNP provisioning.
That is exactly. So unexpected of you.
How unexpected, So that was a good mix.
Yeah. How did you come up being the provisioning guy?
I know this. Wasn't you? No, you want to do the history of the provisioning engine? I used to be one of those of many developers out there that reinvented the wheel themselves. I built, like when I was still a consultant, I built a provisioning engine for the company I was working for at the time in Stockholm. And
is there anybody in this call who has not built a provisioning engine? Raise your hand.
There we go. Given that background and the fact that we thought like, hey, why don't we build something a bit more generic so other people can reuse that? That's where I ended up building the PNP provisioning engine, and I didn't do it, obviously not alone. It's an incredible big team of people working on there, both on the PNP team, but also the community out there. Yep. So it's...
I think there's more than 100 contributors already on the PNP engine thing. So, and obviously, one thing which you also have been leading quite hectically and well is the PNP PowerShell. So,
that's
can you talk about that one slightly and also
Yeah. PNP PowerShell again started as a hobby project of not, yeah, as a, no, as a need. I was again a consultant time. I used to be a consultant, just like Vesheim, a recovering consultant.
Is there anybody in this call who is not?
Exactly.
Good point. Good point. It's like we share fair, more than we are aware of.
And it's never going to go away. So,
and I wanted to do things towards SharePoint Online that I couldn't with the current scripting environment. So you ended up writing these console applications all the time that did like change one thing. And then if you want to change that thing to into something else, you have to recompile that console application. And it tired me. And it's like, okay, let's dive into if I can build it as a PowerShell. And I wrote PowerShell scripts. And they were cumbersome.
So you were building a CLI.
Effectively, I built a CLI. Yes. Yeah,
that's like the picture.
In this case, a real one. No.
Yeah.
So
a sheep, a drum, and a snake. No.
Not that so, again.
I gave that away. The code I actually pinged Vesa, and the result was that the PowerShell library I wrote became open source and became PNP and is now used like 30 million times a day, which is scary.
A lot.
Yep. So for those who are kind of figuring out how do we actually track that, so as part of the calls, whenever somebody using the PNP PowerShell, we add a header on the call so we know when it's actually being landing on SharePoint Online on the other side, and then we're able to then crawl that or do a counts basically on what commands were executed and on what time frame. And we're obviously, we need to understand how people are using these things. So we understand where we are betting the money and where we are or where we're investing our messaging and resources potentially, and what do we want to do future with SharePoint Online.
Important to point out that we do record which commandlet was executed, but not what you're doing with them. So we're not recording the parameters and nothing like that. Just like now, Connect PNP Online was executed.
No values, no passwords. And the best part is that if you really want to investigate that, open Fiddler and you will see exactly what's going across the wire.
Absolutely.
And that will be the final proof, nothing to hide.
Yep, absolutely. And plus everything is open source as well because that's provides visibility on what's actually happening. So, and that's kind of the SharePoint Online, the PNP PowerShell is being used so widely nowadays, people don't necessarily even understand that it started as a weekend and an evening project, right? Because it's being used by thousands and thousands of customers every single day, basically on operating and automating stuff. There's scripts running all around the world using PNP PowerShell. So thank you, everyone.
But isn't it the case with everything that everything started as an idea or spare time project and then evolves into this thing?
Well, typically yes. So it's actually, I would say it's quite rare to have especially open source community driven and led stuff which would be coming from top down, actually, because typically these things actually come from a grassroots effort and then they grow. So then they could grow to be a massive service or a product. Hey, who knows? Even SharePoint was super small back in 2001, Tahoe timeframe. So, and nowadays it's quite massive. So a few hundred, is it 100 million active users every single month? So it's just mind blowing. Anyway, what else do we want to talk about? Any good learnings, Irvin, from your side? So you moved from Rancor. You used to be Waldeck's colleague. You couldn't get along with Waldeck, so you needed to actually move in another.
No. It's the CLI, sorry. You know.
It's the CLI and PowerShell fight. But any good learnings on moving across the company or any insights or anything that's really, truly changed on your job?
No, well, I have a new office.
Open ended question. So
if you compare the view from the last time, I have a bigger. It has nothing to do with me changing, but I finally have a bigger office, so that's a good change. But it's an interesting new world I'm in. For me, I'm a very much a back end person, obviously, I am not that much into UI things, but I joined a company that is very heavily on building great UIs and great experiences, and that is that's very interesting to work with that. And they're very, very heavily invested into the whole SPFX ecosystem, yeah. And that's wonderful to work with. Yes. So, yeah. Big insights? No. No. Not that.
What's
actually,
the grass greener on the other side?
I have to say, one interesting part is that I mean, I've been building this provisioning engine now for years and years and years, but now I'm actually one of the consumers also of the engine.
Sure.
I am consuming the engine, and that is beneficial for both me, but also very beneficial for the project itself, where I will be way more heavily consuming the things I'm building, and as a result, the quality will go up, hopefully even more.
That would imply that the quality wasn't there in the past.
No, just, I'm not saying
no. It'll be more.
More, even more, even more. Absolutely, absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So other things on that area of points, we did promise that we're going to spend a few minutes on this discussion. So we are starting already with Irvin and a few other people working and planning and kind of crafting the structures for the .NET Core side of the engine as well. So that work has already been started. Well, it's super early.
Define .NET Core side of the engine. Because people might not know it.
That's a fair point. So right now, if you think about the BMP site score, BMP's the engine itself is actually a CSAM extension. So SharePoint Online CSAM extension, which is then actually using REST and Graph already as such, because for Teams operation, it's using Graph for Outlook and OneDrive operation, I think it's using Graph. But then when it operates on SharePoint, it actually uses CSAM. And then when CSAM is not enough, it actually falls back on REST. So it's kind of this kind of a, how would I put it, end result of a evolution rather than years and years of thinking and having a vision from a day one. I think the vision was there, but it's at some point, it's just a matter of just molding it to what it is right now. And right now, what we're planning to do, and then PMP PowerShell is just a wrapper on basically calling that one. Well, it's PMP PowerShell is much more than that as well, so because the engine is just a small part of things. But now what we started actually doing is that hopefully by SPC, we're pretty open and honest on the
which
timelines.
One? Which
SPC,
one?
Yeah, hopefully SPC 2020, we can actually release or at least preview a .NET Core slash standard version of the core engine, the provisioning engine and the operations, which are extending the base API surface in the Microsoft 365 or Office 365.
Yes. So PNP .NET Core SDK.
Kind of.
For SharePoint, for you mentioned Teams, you mentioned Outlook.
Just as well, Planner. So the intention what we have, if you think about the engine, when we talk about the engine, and yes, it's actually a good point that we're kind of assuming that everybody understands
what is the engine. Exactly.
But the vision and what the engine actually does is a tenant template engine. And the whole point of the tenant templating is that you can basically create a template which is multiple site collections, contains site designs, contains theme structures, contains OneDrive configurations, contains actual Azure AD users even, as defined one BMP file with branding assets and JavaScript files and SPFX solutions and everything. And then you're able to basically have this one BMP file, which is actually an open XML file, but that's a side discussion. And I can send it to you, and you can actually apply that tenant stamp on any tenant in the world, and you'll get the same end result. That's basically just templating in Teams, not just templating in SharePoint, not just templating in one specific application, rather surfacing the whole thing.
And then go ahead, Malfik.
So, in other words, what you're trying to say is that your ambition is to have a M365 wide provisioning solution.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Is that
so?
Put it somewhere in the docs.
Yes, It should put somewhere in the docs. Now, now there's a multiple dimensions where we need to improve, which is, for example, the documentation. And now we're starting the new effort, and which is using .NET Core and Standard. The documentation is documentation first, and issue list first, and GitHub first, and all of that stuff, because we need to fix that. It's been too successful, so to say, that we kind of fell behind of the success, and we haven't been able to catch up. But when you think about the intentions, if you think about Teams, Teams has templates. Teams has Microsoft Graph APIs to define templates and extract templates and apply templates. But Teams themselves is not actually sufficient. You typically want to surface something in the Teams templates as well, like let's say SharePoint lists or applications or portals. And how do you define all of that as a end-to-end template?
But I guess that's not really specific to Teams, because if you look at from non-Microsoft side of the table, SharePoint is exactly the same. Site design, site scripts is just sites.
Teams
is only time. So it's just like every service has their own way of doing things. And at the end of the day, people who use it, for them, it's everything. Like basically the same way in the past where we used to customize sites, we would build WSP and it was all encompassing. Everything was in there, from web parts to timer jobs. Nowadays, you have a web part in SPFX, you might have API in functions on Azure, you might have storage in Azure somewhere, you might have a long-running operation, you might have Logic App, you might have flows, and that is the same solution.
Yep.
Spanning across all the different things, and you need to package all of that now.
Yes. Yes. And the vision is going potentially to the level even of taking care of the Azure side of the house. So having in the PMP tenant templates, having a fraction or a structure where you are able to embed the Azure automation, because Azure has actually really good templating. Exactly. And they have really awesome set of templating. But typically right now, if you automate all of this, you need to do one operation there, one operation there, one operation there, one operation there. You have multiple different scripts, you use different PowerShells and everything else. It's not a super easy thing to use, rather than having one structure.
Yeah,
and then
even there you have the boundaries, right? Because like even in ARM templates, you cannot create AADM.
Correct.
So even there are boundaries. And again, at the end of the day, people who use it, they need all of it. So as you say, like one PNP file, and that would be cool to have as an extension, like .one PNP. It's the one PNP file. Everything is your one PNP file.
But maybe I can add a bit to the whole effort that we're working on currently with basically the thinking process, because that's where we are. We're in the thinking process. So one of the things already that surfaced in our thinking is that we really want to approach this effort as, and now we're building a real SDK. PMP Sites Core has been built over years and has grown over years and effectively started off as a sample and started to grow, and it actually became almost more than a sample. And now it's to the level of almost being, I don't know what you want to call it, a product. It's in this gray area there. But weird. Yeah.
25,000 tenants every single month using it, which is,
So we're approaching it now as like this is an SDK we're building, and we're doing it the right way and we're doing it the correct way. That means that documentation and everything needs to be in place, but also unit tests. Everything should have a unit test. And that also might mean, most likely, that in the future when you create a PR, because everything, of course, will be open source again. When you create a PR, there needs to be a unit test, otherwise we will reject the PR.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah. So no unit test, no PR. We will not look into it. Unless you do
I think it's a fair assumption if somebody is submitting something which is business critical for many of the customers. So I think it's a completely understandable assumption.
And I was wondering, because we use the words .NET Core and .NET Standard like as if it's nothing. People might not be 100% aware of what now you see if you have .NET Framework, .NET Standard, .NET Core, and what is the difference, just to make sure that, because for I assume many people actually that world is still pretty new, the .NET Core, .NET Standard world. So .NET Standard is nothing but effectively a file format. And it means that if you have a .NET Core application, it can read the code, the assemblies based on .NET Standard. And if you have a .NET Framework application newer than 4.6.1, it can also read that .NET Standard assembly. So you have basically a single DLL that can be read on like Mac, Linux, Windows, regardless of effectively the framework you're using, .NET framework or .NET Core framework. So the PNP Sites Core library, and for the confusion, we already realized that if we call it PNP Sites Core, but it's based on the standard, you have core and standard. It's very confusing. Exactly.
Not call it core. Yes.
Probably no, we'll call it something different.
Yes.
just call it an SDK.
Yeah, well, that's, most likely.
We'll give it some other name. So the PNP version of the site's core will be based on .NET standards and most likely 2.1. So it can be consumed in .NET Core 3.1, I think, and .NET and the .NET framework 4.6.1.
And then what about the .NET 5, which is coming pretty soon as well?
Yeah, well, that's also one of the reasons we're actually doing this work right now, because the .NET 5 will be just one framework. There's nothing else. There's no different things. It's just bang, and we're moving to that one. So all the work we're doing right now will just get us ready to actually very relatively easily migrate to .NET Framework 5.
Yep. And then hopefully have a tenant-scoped templating system across all of these different applications as an open-source solution where community can contribute and we can extend that together. Because as we have seen with the old work of the engine and the site score and PNP PowerShell, together with community, it's just mind-blowing what you can achieve. Or CLI is a good example. The Office 365 CLI keeps on evolving every single week. There's new releases and new features and everything. And the momentum is definitely growing all the time. Like in every single open source solution, the it's kind of a reverse long tail. It takes a long time for things to catch, but then when it catches, it goes and there. Yeah. Then you are like, holy shit.
Well, it's more about critical mass, right? You need to have enough to be useful, and then at that point, it becomes even more useful, and then people will start noticing that it will become like once you will jump the fence and say, you know what, yes, I can use that because it has enough for me, then you will start looking at that, adopting it, and thinking of it, what if it would do this? What if it would do that? As opposed to saying, this is nice, but it doesn't have X, Y, and Z, meaning I can't do anything with that, so I'm back to my old way of doing things.
Yep, absolutely. Or, hey, this is a one-person open source project. There isn't enough people. I can't rely on this because there's only 2 person, 3 person, 4 person, 5 person. But then when it goes across the critical mass, it's like, oh, there's multiple people contributing. This seems to be interesting. I can trust that. So it's an interesting. We've seen this with a lot of these open source projects which we've been executing throughout the years. First with the CSI score, then PNP PowerShell is a good example. It was pretty slow for a long time, and then suddenly, PNP JS, absolutely an awesome example as well. Slow, so, 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 and then now it's being used even more soon than the site score. But it is the critical mass in reaching that audience, and then Now there's a sky is only the sky is the limit. Is that the limit? I don't know. Whatever.
So. but it also comes to many, let's say, non-code related things, right? Because at the end of the day, people will have things they don't know how to do. So they will have questions.
Yeah,
they will look up the docs.
Absolutely.
They will look at examples.
Absolutely.
They will go to events where people might or might not talk about it, right? So everything else than the actual code being there, like there's also a need for that. And that takes time to evolve, right? Because like you don't create that overnight.
Absolutely. 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 Cool. Should we actually have a look on the articles and what's actually happening and then get back on the sessions? And let's actually do that. Let's have a quick look on this week's happenings. Let me share my screen. SharePoint Saturday St. Louis is on this Sunday. Saturday.
I mean, SPS could be in theory SharePoint Sunday.
Yeah, that is true. That is so true. Okay, SharePoint Saturday St. Louis is on this Saturday. And there's I think it's again, one of those big ones. So a lot of speakers, a lot of different tracks, multiple sessions here and there. Yeah, a lot of people actually walking. We're not going to deep dive obviously on all of the sessions, but I think there's multiple tracks here as well. Quite two people actually. So
it
because otherwise, the schedule hasn't been the sessions were already at least listed. And a lot of stuff related on SharePoint framework development, obviously, adaption of things and change management, all of that stuff as well. Power Platform, and creating joint services in Office 365, too many options in Office 365. That's an interesting session. And those would be an awesome sessions to actually sit down and listen as well. Zero trust models, how security a big thing as well. So really, really good set of sessions coming up on St. Louis this Saturday. Now, on the Microsoft side of the house, we didn't actually have any, let's say, new announcements this week, or I didn't actually find, maybe I missed something. But one of the things what we actually promoted at least was the Meeting Capture application, which is a combination of Microsoft Teams, SharePoint Framework, and Microsoft Craft. Application, which is actually open source as well. So it's quite actually comprehensive sample, which is showing different kind of things. This is an SPFX web part as an example, but then there has a slightly more complex SaaS service, which you can actually surface and collect attendees and collect the information and agenda items. So it was something which was actually built by multiple people last autumn, and we used it in Ignite as one of the demo solutions. And that is now open sourced. So really cool stuff to have a look on if you're interested in building these kind of solutions.
Nice.
This one, just well, this is actually me talking, but if we go
awesome here, demo from Vesa.
Yes.
Oh, that is the awesome demo from Vesa.
I've been hearing that now for the whole week. I just used my default template where I'm promoting everybody. Fine. But this is basically from the community call, SharePoint Framework community call a few weeks back from January 8th, a summary video on the SharePoint Framework and Office Add-ins. So Office Add-ins built using SharePoint Framework is in preview right now in 1.10, and then it's intended to go GA later this year. Hopefully the spring, we'll see how fast we can actually move on things. But really using, again, the same tech for Office Add-ins, and then the renaming of SharePoint Framework is in the pipeline as well whenever we get some decisions out of it. But that's coming sooner or later. Then this one was use a CLI to get access token for Azure AD protected web API. Why would you do this, Waldeck?
So when you build an API that communicates, for example, with either Graph or something else, or API itself is secured with AD. The moment you want to test that, like, you need a token because you need to authenticate, right? So how do you obtain that? Well, you can try to implement the whole flow yourself, or follow the example by Paul and use either the Azure CLI or the Office 365 CLI, and basically with a single command call, get a token and do your debugging and go from there.
Exactly. So, and the examples are here: AZ account get access token, and then our 365 access token kit, and getting the list of that for that API or application. So, pretty neat way of getting information. Good summary from Paul on that one. From Charpas, quick tip: getting HTTP 500 when approving permissions in API management base. So, this is really around managing your permissions for Office 365 SPFX application. We've been having regressions here, unfortunately. Some of the exceptions are understandable. Some of the exceptions are not as understandable. So like that one, a 500 and a correlation ID is something, which is like, okay, well, that doesn't actually give me that much information, but there's an access denied. You do not have a permission to perform the access resource or interception privileges to complete. Quite often, actually, these exceptions are related on the fact that the person who tried to approve is a SharePoint administrator, but not a tenant administrator. But when we are approving these API permissions in SharePoint Online or in Office 365, you need to be a tenant administrator. So, because it's approving and operating against Azure AD. Good. This one is interesting. Waldeck, do you want to actually talk about this one as well? Because I think this falls directly on your category.
Oh, yes. Recently GitHub released the notion of action. An action is a way for you to automate work in your repos. As you can expect, basically actions are a in a way, analogy to the activities that you have in Azure DevOps or any other CI/CD environment. And in GitHub, we released recently three actions related to Office 365 CLI that allow you to automate CLI-related tasks in your GitHub pipes. So here you're looking what you're seeing on the screen, and we will have the link to that included in notes, explaining what the actions are, what are they meant for, how do you use them, and so forth and so on.
Yep, absolutely. Really good stuff on automating operations across the board, and they are in GitHub Marketplace, so really cool.
Yes.
Good. Moving on forward, this is from Nandeep, related on how do we actually use SharePoint framework, so the PMP controls. So PMP, there is an SPFX PMP controls for property pane, and then there's the let's say contextual controls. And what's cool about these controls is that you don't need to worry about where the data is coming from. So the list control is quite simple example of that one. So he walks through the process of using that, and then there's the list picker control, but you don't actually need to again feed the list of lists where the list or figure out where the list of lists is coming. You can actually just say, are we going to include hidden, multi-select, what's the base template, and that's it. And then the control itself is, let's say, intelligent enough of understanding where the list is coming. So it's almost like it's definitely a similar concept as the Graph toolkit is basically a similar thing, but operating against Graph. So you don't have to worry about where the data is coming from. You just define the control on the page and poof, we're good to go. So this one is the our crumpy Italian. Bad joke. classic
this is serious
joke.
Stuff. This is
the man that never
stuff.
Smiles.
Come on, guys. You should stop this game. I'm not serious all the time, but I'm serious now. You should watch my videos now. Ciao.
But yeah, Microsoft Teams personal apps from Paolo and basically walking through what is that process and explaining how things are doing. And I think he is actually, I can probably see the moment where he is doing that. There it is. So the personal apps are quite convenient to actually use. So the only thing what you need to do to make your web part as a personal app is to add a new entry and a metadata over there. So supported hosts equal Teams personal app. It will then automatically create the manifest file. SharePoint will generate the manifest file for the Teams. If you want, you can actually create that manually as well if you prefer to do so.
And this is available from SharePoint Framework 1.10 onwards.
Yes, correct. And it is GA, not a preview, so it only works properly. So that's pretty cool. So, yep, there's the crumpy challenge. Now, okay, moving forward. The SharePoint Framework extension, advanced copy and move, nice story from Joel related on the fact that the out-of-the-box copy and move is not necessarily super flexible, and it has some limitations. So basically, in his story, in case somebody wanted to actually have a slightly more complex, let's say, a targeting, whether you want to actually define that search, the folder where you want to actually relocate stuff, and then copy here. And nice summary on how that can be implemented. So from Joel. Cute. And this is from Mikael Svensson, program manager in Microsoft Search Experiences. So he has updated that. So good.
Of course.
But basically, you can use Microsoft Graph or the V2 endpoint, obviously Graph preferred, to actually get a thumbnail to any file in the which is hosted in SharePoint or in OneDrive. And he's basically just having a sample there how to do that. It has been already merged the SPDev web parts as well. So you can easily find that from there. And then the last one is from Elia around using Cypress Hill.
So a sheep, a drum, and a snake.
Yeah, I'll be here the whole evening. Using yes. Cypress to end-to-end testing your SharePoint solutions. So web testing, UI testing of the SharePoint solution, making sure understanding when stuff is breaking up. So that's what this is all about. So good blog post from Ilya on that one. Well, if you are looking into automating these things, cool. That's the articles for this week. What else do we want to talk about?
Whatever you want to do. Well, so maybe an interesting experiment, like something you would never encounter yourself, because when you are on the other side of the things just work. But like the other day, we realized that majority of people who use CLI do it in PowerShell. Seriously, it's like, okay, interesting. And also another thing that we learned is that majority of them are on Windows. It's like, so like it's like the whole opposite of our initial audience. But hey, I mean, if it helps, it helps, right? But with that,
I think it proves the point that it's a useful tool. And it's I think the CLI is more targeted for developers than PMP PowerShell.
Exactly. PMP PowerShell is sort of traditionally more targeted towards admins and power users, where CLI from basically day one was focused on developers.
Yep.
Anyway, so like when you use CLI in the PowerShell shell or PowerShell, like one thing you don't get is completion for commands, because it's a non-native PowerShell commandlet or a module. And apparently there are ways to build it. Like you can build custom completion for anything you like, for .NET, for Node, for anything. And it's a very interesting way, like how things work, what is being called, what is being passed. Like you basically get passed the whole string into your, because you basically write a commandlet. Yep. That accepts the parameters, like, okay, what commands is being called? What are the arguments? Give me back completions for this string. And then you have to chop it, understand which commands are being called, what are the commands, what are the arguments, what are the values for that, and make sense out of that. It's really interesting experiment. But it's like one thing that is really complex is that the way I approach it is that at first I would call it basically as a script, because there is no debugging. You type something in command line, you press tab, and there is no way to attach debugger to that. So basically the way you build it is you call the script with number of different tests, and then it passes and you assume it works. And I erected a point where everything would work, but then in command line, I would press tab and then nothing's back. Like, what's wrong? And there's no debugging, there's no exceptions, no errors, nothing. Because at that point, when you call completion, like no exceptions are being displayed in the shell. Like all of it is just internal. What turns out in the end, that I made an assumption that the string that you type, that is being passed into completion as a string. It isn't. It's an AST object. And then when you try to call a string split on a non-string, well, that throws an exception,
that
which
fails.
You do not see.
Yeah, exactly.
Seriously.
Yeah.
Like, time I wasted on trying to figure that out. Just basically, like, read the manual. Damn it.
But that's always a waste of time, the reading something, right? You just want to test out and test things, and
especially when you look at it and it works, but the way it works is based on a wrong assumption in the first place.
Makes perfect sense.
Nevertheless, we have it, we are about to ship that, so finally I think that we originally identified this gap like 2 years back. Now we finally at the point where, well, there is like majority of our audience doesn't have command completion. That's kind of awkward. Like, we need to fix that immediately.
But I think it's more natural for people to use, coming back on the CLI using rather than PowerShell. It's if you go to the terminal, let's say in a Visual Studio Code, it might feel more natural to use Office 365 CLI than suddenly calling a PowerShell in the terminal, except for you, Irvin, obviously. You know
there's native PowerShell support in Visual Studio Code.
There is. Yeah, I know. I'm starting all of my terminals in PowerShell mode because it's just convenient to have that there. Yeah. So, but it's a matter of preference, and then do people know that it is there that you can do that? So there's so many different settings and options and preferences what people do. If you have a look on nowadays on the Visual Studio Code, it's actually interesting because you can have such a tremendous amount of different extensions that you don't actually know what's there out of the box and what isn't, because the extensions are bringing you the new UIs and experiences and themes and everything else. It's like, I was checking the have you used the Windows terminal? terminal, the new one, the previous terminal.
I use it all the time.
Oh, you use it all the time.
I couldn't get that installed on my VM in Azure.
Okay.
Apparently, an older Windows build, and I couldn't run the updates for some reason. Like, you know what? Leave it.
I don't care.
Yeah, you need a relatively new build of Windows 10.
Yeah.
Run it. So I tested that, and it's convenient, but it's still missing kind of the extension galleries. It's all the extension models, the theming, everything else. And yes, you can modify the colors by yourself, but it's like, yeah, I'm not going to do that. So
actually, one thing about the Windows Terminal that I found out the other day, because what annoyed me a lot is that in the classic shell of Windows, like classic PowerShell,
it's CMD.
That doesn't matter if it's PowerShell or command prompts. You can do Control-C, Control-V, and that works. But in the Windows Terminal, it doesn't. You have to select it and do it the old school right-click. However, Control-Shift-C and Control-Shift-V does work. And I actually got triggered by that because I read an article of someone talking about Linux and said that if you copy things in the Linux shell, you do Control-Shift-Copy and Control-Shift-V. And that actually also worked in the Windows Terminal.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Also, in the terminal that I use, I can just do commands. Yeah, okay, fair enough, because Control-C doesn't translate cross-platform, because on a Mac, it is a Command-C. Control-C is break.
Yeah.
Okay, so fair enough. Huh, interesting.
Yeah. No, but I use it. What I like about the Windows Terminal is I have like configurations for like the classic PowerShell, the PowerShell Core, the latest 7 preview, but also my Ubuntu installation on my machine. And it just...
Because, of course, you have Ubuntu installed on your machine.
WSL.
Yeah, I have WSL, Windows Subsystem of Linux running. Yeah.
Because, of course, you have. Of course you have.
But, yeah, I mean...
Nowadays, in these days, yes, that's kind of...
Especially when we're building .NET Core version or .NET Standard version of CSUM. Sure. Yeah, we can also test that then in Linux. Yeah.
Okay. completely side discussion. What's happening this week? Any good things? Interesting things happening this week for you guys?
No, for me it's just a work week. Normal work week. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Next week will be fun. I will go to Finland.
Welcome.
Thank you.
We finally got some snow this morning, but it's melting away.
Especially for you, so that your flight will be stuck, delayed. You will end up across the runway and all of that.
Helsinki Airport hasn't been suffering any of that since like decades ago already. So it doesn't have any impact on Helsinki.
It wasn't the last time, but it was one of the last or flights you had there, wasn't that you overshot the runway?
I did overshot the runway, but that was in Reykjavik, Iceland.
Oh, okay, fair enough. Oh, yeah, in Reykjavik, they don't know anything, right? In Helsinki, obviously, duh.
Yeah, I think it's a pretty similar experience, actually, with Reykjavik. I think they're slightly more north, but then they get the Gulf current is heating up the sea over there, so... It's not as cold, even though it's above in the Arctic Circle.
Oh, okay.
So
that day it was pretty cold.
Okay.
Cold that the pilot didn't really realize how slippery the runway was, and we made quite a move with that Boeing.
He would drift with the Boeing. Like
we did actually, right? All sideways on the runway, and then ended up deep in the snow, and we had to wait an hour before they were able to actually get a bus to the flight plane.
Wow.
That the buses drove away from the plane in a train shape, like a 1 meter between each bus, so they could actually see where they were driving. It was crazy. Yeah.
So much for we know this
we know snow.
Snow.
Yeah. Exactly. Snow.
We have it every day. It's Wednesday. Nope.
Well, to be fair, it doesn't have as big impact as in North America, as an example, because I still remember there was a reminder actually in my Facebook memories. I think it was 2015 when I was flying back from internal Tech Ready, and JFK was closed and the West Coast was closed as well. And I think it was the first plane which pretty much left from Seattle flying to JFK, because the snowy was just about to end and it wasn't sure if it's going to land in JFK or somewhere else when it's actually get out. But the weird thing was that if you ever seen the Stephen King movie or the series where I went to the airport and there was nobody. There seriously was nobody at the airport. And you're in the Seattle airport, which is typically quite busy. And you go through the security and you're like, oh, this looks scary.
Well, but I mean, you talk about snow paralyzing airports. Like here in the Netherlands, the first sign of autumn that we get, like there's a leaf on the rails, trays do not drill. Like, seriously. So it's like, don't mention snow because the moment there is like any sign of snow, like the whole infrastructure is paralyzed.
Yeah, I can imagine that. Yeah. Anyway,
on that bombshell, the weather forecast for this week.
Weather forecast. Exactly.
This is SPDEV Weekly with your weekly weather forecast.
Okay. Anyway, so we'll be definitely back within a week. I think we have like 4 to 5 weeks visitors already.
Planned, with guests. Fingers crossed.
So we're looking really good from that perspective. New people as well. Not you just know, Irving.
Very good.
Time. So, Irving, let's actually start wearing a wig so you can actually be a different person every single week.
I can do that.
Yeah. That's a bad joke. Anyway, so thanks everybody for watching. Thank you everyone for joining us.
And listening in.
Listening in, yes. This is also available as podcast. So we'll be back within a week. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Thank you, everybody. Bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you.